Assembly Bill 305 would prohibit the sale and use of fetal body parts after an induced abortion. At an emotional Assembly Committee hearing this week, Dr. Robert Golden, Dean of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, warned of an immediate disruption in critical medical research at UW-Madison if SB 305 becomes law. Thanks to Dr. Golden for agreeing to discuss AB 305 and that medical research. Dr. Golden, welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you.
Very complex issue. So take us back to maybe an overview. Let's talk about the extent of research that involves fetal tissue, fetal cells, stem cells. Why are these different items being used for research? Can we start with an overview? And I realize how complex it is, sir.
Sure. It is complicated, but let me try to simplify the complexity of human biology. So research is on a continuum from very basic discovery. You can think of it as test tubes. You can think of it as molecules or animals, to human investigation, to clinical trials of new treatment. And so we need fetal tissue, embryonic stem cells, fetal cells. We need them at all stages of the development of potential new treatments. And we cannot flick a switch and develop a new treatment in a couple of years. But rather, we have to start understanding the enemy, understanding the biology of cancer, the biology of pancreatic cells that stop functioning with diabetes. So we have to start with an understanding of the disease process. Then we try to figure out ways to reverse or prevent or trick the disease process or substitute for a non-functioning part of the body. And then as we develop those approaches, we have to test them in people. Now, there has been understandable use of words that only talk about part of the continuum. At the very spirited debate, there was a discussion of experimentation on fetal tissue. There were statements that fetal tissues don't work as treatments. In fact, what this bill will shut down and devastate is the entire continuum of discovery, going back to the roots of basic science, where we need to do research with fetal tissue, utilizing fetal tissue as a tool. So for example, in many experiments, far more than the numbers we referred to when we talked about the number of currently funded projects, for reasons we don't fully understand, that's why we need to do more research, embryonic kidney cells, when added to the fluid that we use to grow up other components of our research, other tissues, they allow those tissues to grow so that we can use them in research.
But now, you said embryonic
kidney cells.
Is that embryonic fetal kidney cells, sir? I'm just trying to get it straight.
It includes kidney cells that came from an embryo. And with research, we can sometimes learn how to keep propagating them so we don't have to keep going back for more fetal tissue. In other cases, though, our research requires fresh tissue rather than replicated in the laboratory cells or frozen tissue. So you can think of it sort of like cooking in your kitchen. Sometimes you can use frozen supplies for your cooking, but there are some recipes, for whatever reasons, where you have to have fresh supplies. So one example at the beginning of the discovery process is that we need embryonic kidney cells to put into the soup that we use to grow up other ingredients of the research that we're going to do. In other cases, we don't simply need the cells. We actually have to have a very thin microscopic slice of tissue, because that tissue, which maintains the communication between the cells, is necessary for another part of the process in bringing an idea down the road to see if it works or not. So, for example, on this campus, we have teams of scientists that have developed an amazing tool that can be used in so many situations. A lot of our research involves mice, but the immune system of a mouse is very different from the immune system of a human being. What our scientists have developed is a wonderful new tool where if they get a thin slice of fresh, not frozen, fetal thymus gland, and they put it into the mouse in a very careful way. That thymus gland in the mouse acts the way thymus glands work in people, and it programs the mouse white blood cells to develop as if they were human white blood cells of a certain type, what we call T cells, named after the thymus gland that is programming them. Now that we have developed that tool, we can apply it to so many situations you can imagine. You now have a mouse whose white blood cells are working like a human white blood cell. And instead of experimenting on humans, we can experiment on mice. And this can be applied to infectious diseases. It can be applied to other diseases where the white cells are overreacting. It can be applied to cancer, to examine the way in which the immune system can be modified to attack cancer cells. So that's not research on fetal tissue. It's an example of research using fetal tissue. And we can't use frozen stuff from 29. We need fresh tissue so that it will function in the mouse's body as if it were in a human body. Then there are other examples where moving towards stem cells, which is not part of this bill, but we know that the proposers of this bill don't view this as their last chapter. It's part of a well-orchestrated approach that will lead to more and more restrictions on experiments and on research.
But aren't there limits on stem cell research now as a result of the controversy, I don't know, X number of years ago, sir?
Oh, there are limits not only on stem cell, but on fetal tissue research. There is federal legislation in place that safeguards, as much as any legislation or law can safeguard things, so that we are very appropriately heavily regulated in how we can use fetal tissue. I mean, to be frank, it came out even before the formal hearings. Across the country, people are understandably reacting to the surreptitious videos of Planned Parenthood. And misstatements have been made on the other side. When we do research here, we do not get any fetal tissue from abortion clinics. We do not get any fetal tissue from Planned Parenthood, but rather the federal government has selected four licensed and regulated tissue banks. And our scientists receive their material from any of those four banks. Three of them are housed in universities, one on the East Coast, two on the West Coast, and one of them is a freestanding facility. So there are plenty of regulations. When one seeks NIH funding for doing research that will involve fetal tissue one way or the other, it not only undergoes local and federal scientific review, but also local and federal ethical review to make sure that all of the fetal tissue will be obtained through licensed tissue banks and that the need is clearly established and that there are specific guidelines and regulations that you must follow if you're going to do that research.
Okay, as Dean, you've answered one question that I had. You're quite confident that your school doesn't get any fetal tissue from any Planned Parenthood, even through a subcontractor, sir?
We get all of our tissue from one of the four tissue banks. Now, those four tissue banks arrange to get the material from any one of a number of sources, and ultimately, of course, the fetal tissue comes from results of an abortion. We don't want to sugarcoat that. It's obvious. But we get all of our material on this university from federally licensed, federally regulated tissue banks. We do not interact directly with abortion clinics. We do not interact directly with Planned Parenthood. We go to the four tissue bank organizations that the federal government established to serve the entire country under their regulations and watchful eyes.
As a result of the emergence of the controversy over AB 305, have you asked your four tissue banks whether they get that from Planned Parenthood, sir?
Well, it's recently come to our attention that one of the four tissue banks, the one that is not embedded in the university, was linked in ways that I haven't seen yet, but I am told from good sources, was linked to the video discussions that took place with Planned Parenthood. So we are all over that now, and we are looking to see if any regulations or ethics were violated as far as we can tell without doing our own independent investigation. We're double checking with the appropriate authorities and sources. And if that's the case, we will never use them. We will use the three that are embedded in the universities and that are not part of the current controversy.
As a medical professional, what was your personal reaction to the secretly taped Planned Parenthood videos, Doctor?
They were very provocative. I've got to say they were emotionally very distressing. I also have to say, though, that I have seen how videos, especially those that are done secretly, can be manipulated, can be edited, taken out of context. And so at this point, I am very concerned and very upset by what took place, but I have an open mind until more objective parties really analyze. I understand that the full unedited tapes are available, but with all that's been going on here, I haven't had time yet to look at them.
Just, you mentioned research with mice. Excuse me if I ask a stupid question. What percentage of the research done at here on this campus deals with animals, and what percent deals with fetal? I mean, just can you just put it in perspective?
I'm afraid I can't.
Okay.
I can say this. We have approximately $76 million in funding from the NIH that supports research that utilizes one way or the other fetal cells or fetal tissue. But there are other studies. I mean, it depends how you want to define it. It's been discussed, I think, quite well that we would not have the polio vaccine that we have today if this law had
Kessler
been
made that dramatic
in
statement.
Effect. Well, some of our research draws on the technologies that were involved in creating polio vaccine. In fact, some of the important work going on here, develop new kinds of vaccine, uses polio vaccine. Is that using fetal tissue? Well, yes and no. It depends on how you want to define it. The polio vaccine that we use in certain studies and certainly in clinical practice all the time here was ultimately derived from research that used fetal tissue. So does that count or does it not count? So that's why it's very hard to say.
Is there any other major medical breakthroughs that have been achieved through research using fetal tissue on this campus?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just here's one of the ironies. One of the most important breakthroughs was the unbelievable work done by Jamie Thompson and his team in developing a new approach that doesn't need fetal tissue, induced pluripotential stem cells. They can be used some of the time, and whenever we can, we use those for obvious reasons. They would not be available as a tool to get us away from fetal tissue if they had not been able to be developed using fetal tissue. So I think that's an important breakthrough that clearly shows that in order to advance science, cure diseases, we need to have fetal tissue for now, but our ultimate goal is to get to the point where we don't need it. In all fairness, we're not close, but we're closer than we were a while ago. There's important work going on this campus to develop vaccines to prevent the kind of horrible new strains of flu that can devastate our entire community. That work can't go forward if there isn't the availability. In fact, the CEO of FluGen, a private company not associated with us, made it very clear that his company would probably have to leave Wisconsin, taking their discovery but also their economic investment in the state with them. So there are important lines of research going on every day. I can't say that a cure for cancer is around the corner. That would be overly optimistic. But I can say that we will get there quicker. We will get there quicker for research on diabetes, which is an important part of our portfolio here that relies on fetal tissue. We will get there quicker using every available quiver that we can than if we arbitrarily say you can use this one but not that one.
Are you satisfied that the rules and regulations and state and federal laws on the issue of fetal tissue are providing adequate protections and safeguards, Doctor?
I am satisfied that they are adequate protections and safeguards. With all adequate protections and safeguards, there occasionally are really bad apples, you know, who misbehave, break the rules, try to get away with it. In science in particular, that's a really tiny, tiny, tiny fraction. Most people in science that I've met are incredibly motivated to do good. But of course, no matter what law you have, there might be people that break the law. But it doesn't mean that you create new, more restrictive laws for all the folks that are obeying. It means that you emphasize enforcement. And what I would like to see is rigorous enforcement of the guidelines that we have and continually reviewing them to see if best practices can be made better. So the current laws we have now probably aren't perfect, but this proposal, even with the amendments that were discussed at the hearing, this is incredibly extreme and would shut down research unnecessarily. As I said at the hearing, we are eager to come together and to create reasonable compromises so that we can prevent the alleged profiteering that was suggested by those very upsetting videotapes. Profiteering must not happen. Cheating and breaking the rules by cutting deals with abortion clinics, that must not happen. But it doesn't mean that we eliminate access to tissue from carefully regulated, federally monitored tissue banks.
Because of the Planned Parenthood videos, which you've obviously seen, at least the excerpts, do you think profiteering has occurred, sir?
I really don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. There were some very naive statements made that by one person at the hearing that it only cost $3.50 or $5 to mail the frozen stuff. Just think about it. Think about the cost of getting the material, processing the material, putting it into the appropriate kinds of sterile containers, and then when's the last time you mailed something on dry ice for $3.50? So it's possible that profiteering is taking place. If so, we've got to identify it, punish those people who are doing it, and exert the full extent of the regulations that we have in
place. Is it the role of the federal government to do that, Doctor?
Oh, I would think so, yes, because it's interstate commerce. We get our tissues from the East Coast and the West Coast. For as long as I've been here, which is 2006, we have never, ever received material from any sources in Wisconsin. We have dealt with the four federal tissue banks, which are on the East and the West Coast.
Okay. From the school's website, this quote, UW School of Medicine and Public Health in Madison received more than $286 million in research support in 2013-14, the largest commitment of research funding at UW-Madison. My question is, what percentage of that $286 million would end if AB 305 became law, sir?
Well, let's do the math. About $76 million of research directly would be affected. So but there's the indirect effect. I can tell you already our scientists on campus, including those who do not do fetal tissue research, are very upset because what will be next? What will be the next overreaching intrusion that will hurt their research? Also, many of our best scientists have two or three or four NIH grants. One of them might be with fetal tissue, but the others might not be. If they leave to go to Illinois, they'll take all the grants with them, not just the fetal tissue grant.
There's no doubt in your mind that if SB 305 were signed into law, you would lose this body of research and it would go to other states. Have you already lost some of your talented researchers, sir?
I know of talented researchers who are beginning to return calls that they ordinarily wouldn't return about getting recruited. And to make it really clear, the choice is their research leaves the state with them or else they go to jail. So no sensible scientist on our faculty would go to jail if this law were to be passed.
Sponsors of the bill say it would still allow adults who agree to voluntarily donate fetal tissue after spontaneous abortions, miscarriages, or stillborns. Is that not a mitigating circumstance, sir?
It shows the incredible lack of experience and the naivete of the people making those comments. For this material to be processed and used, it has to be obtained in a scheduled, timed way and then quickly processed, okay? Unfortunately, when people have a spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage, it doesn't usually take place at a healthcare facility. More often than not, it's 2 o'clock in the morning in their bathroom. You know, it's just not feasible to think that you would be able to capture the kinds of carefully collected processed materials when there are spontaneous abortions.
Okay. One comment that elicited a response during the hearing was you said in your testimony, quote, substantial negative impact would result on research on this campus if there were no more abortions. Can you put that in context?
I feel terrible that I was put in this weird position of a gotcha question. It was kind of like the old cliche question, when did you stop beating your wife? No matter what you say, you're going to look bad. Or when did you stop beating your husband, whatever the case might be. So it was obviously a question set up to create a soundbite to make me, and more importantly, our cause and our school look bad. So here's what I wish I had said in response. I truly hope that we reach the day when there is no longer a need for any woman to have to go through the horrible experience of deciding to get an abortion. I really hope we reach that day. We will have a better chance of reaching that point a little bit sooner if we continue to do the research with the available tissues now, so that we can learn how to prevent some of the horrible conditions that lead women to choose to get abortions because of a child that will be born anencephalic, missing part of their brain, because of other diseases that we are studying that we hope to be able to prevent. So I truly wish we can sooner rather than later get to the day when there no longer is a need for some women to have to make the terrible choice for them, the gut-wrenching choice for them to get an abortion. But until we are at that day, I say that when abortions do take place, as is now a constitutionally guaranteed right for a woman to choose, when they do take place, let's try to take the pain and the suffering of going through that process and get some good for society out of it by using tissues that would ordinarily be incinerated or discarded to promote life, by doing life-saving research that will help us get to the point where we no longer have to put women in that horrible bind of thinking about abortion as an option.
Sponsors of the bill also said they made a generous concession, and I want to check my notes to get the wording right. Generous concession when they agreed to allow research to continue on tissue lines obtained before 2010. Does that date make any...
sense whatsoever. No one I've spoken to can figure out why 2010 was chosen. I will say this, that will allow a portion of the research portfolio to continue, but it will shut down a whole bunch of other components, equally important, that rely on fresh tissue, rely on cells and tissues that were obtained since then. It will also shut the door only in Wisconsin for new technologies that are developed down the road that we haven't even thought about yet. So I can't understand the logic between, you know, 2009 is okay, but 2011 isn't. But from a scientific perspective, there are some instances, it's a fraction, there are some instances where fresh tissue is what will work. There are other instances where programmed cells and frozen tissue will work. But this is, I think I might have used this fractured metaphor at the testimony. It's like saying, well, this parachute has a bunch of holes in it, but here's a parachute for you. It's just not going to be effective in keeping the research going that's so important.
Is there any amendment to this bill that would lessen the impact, which you've said crippling, on medical research on this campus, or is this just a bill that should just be defeated?
No, there's all sorts of things that can achieve some of the important goals that some of the proponents are really pushing for. There are ways to cut down on profiteering. There are ways to examine for it. There are ways to really tightly regulate the use of the tissue. There are other processes that can be done. There were stories told, I don't know if they were accurate or not, of women being pressured to have abortions so that the tissue could be obtained. There are safeguards against that. You can completely separate the process of deciding whether or not to get an abortion from another process, temporarily separated, as to whether or not to donate the tissue. So there are important elements. There are important issues that have been stirred up by the release of the Planned Parenthood tapes that we should be focusing on. Eliminate profiteering. Make sure women are not coerced or pressured into getting an abortion for reasons of procuring tissue for research. That's what the bills should be focusing on, not shutting down willy-nilly all promising research because the necessary tissues were obtained in 2011 rather than 2010.
You're a medical professional and not an attorney, but has any UW attorney looked at SB 305 and advised you that it's constitutional or wouldn't be constitutional?
Well, I've learned early in my career not to pretend to be an attorney, so I would encourage you to ask those questions of people with appropriate legal background. I will say this. This falls in the category of some of the misinformation, I fear at times willful information that's being spread. One of the strong proponents of this bill stated publicly in a newspaper interview that ran last weekend that UW is complaining about how this will hurt this research, and it's not true because laws like this have been passed at other places, including Illinois, and they still have a whole lot of research going on there. Well, the law like this that was passed in Illinois was almost immediately ruled unconstitutional and has never been acted on. So unless the person who said that really has bad staff and doesn't bother to check any facts himself, clearly there was misleading of the public by saying that Illinois does research and they have a similar law. So I know that in Illinois and in several other states that have similar legislation that was passed years ago, it was overturned as being unconstitutional. I do believe there are a small number of states that do have similar laws on the books. One of them, I believe, is North Dakota, but quite frankly, North Dakota is not a very active site of biomedical research. Their economy really is driven by other factors. When I look around the country at our peer institutions, at other states, whether they're neighboring states like Illinois or Michigan, or where our peer institutions are in California or in the Northeast or the Southeast, no other state has a law like this on the books. And no state could have a law like this on its books and be a place where cutting-edge biomedical research is going on.
Where does your school rank in terms of medical research nationally? Are we top three, top five, top 10?
Our university is consistently in the top three or so, five to three nationally in terms of research portfolio. Overall, of course, not all of it is medical research. There's important research going on in other disciplines, but
yes.
UW-Madison is consistently pretty much in the top three, and that's something that we should be proud of.
But you said yesterday that word is getting out that UW-Madison is developing an anti-research reputation, right?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, there have been a number of other political events in the past year that have set the stage for it. But
including the $250 million cut to the UW
system
budget? Well,
it cuts to the state system, the discussion.
Which is a cut that will impact your school?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay,
yeah,
excuse me.
We will be impacted, and we'll take our fair share of it. In my opinion, the state budget cut that has been passed on to our school is painful, but is not nearly as devastating as this bill would be. This bill will shut us down as a competitive center of biomedical research, whereas with a lot of pain and difficulty, we're moving forward. We're still on a good trajectory, having given up some opportunities, but still keeping most of our commitments with the state budget cut. This will be horrendous compared to all of the state budget cuts. You know, in the 9 years I've been here, our budget's been cut just about every 2 years. It's just sort of the way it's been. This will be several orders of magnitude more devastating than all of those budget cuts added together.
We're almost out of time, so just a couple questions. When Representative Joel Klefisch met with reporters yesterday, he said that the UW medical school practices on your campus are much more objectionable than those research practices at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Are you aware of any research differences that would justify Representative Klefisch's statement?
I can't think of any justification for a comment like that. We follow the strictest of standards. Our ethics program is among the best in the country, and our School of Medicine and Public Health is one of the very few schools in the country that has a department of medical ethics that's been in place for many, many decades. I think it was probably the first in the country. And so we have always embraced, as the School of the People of Wisconsin, we have always embraced transparency, the highest of ethical standards. And it's not to say that there haven't been violations in rare isolated cases. When they happen, we act swiftly and strongly. But I can't understand why that type of statement would be made by anybody who has any familiarity with what we are all about.
And then finally, I want to ask you about two references from the assembly hearing. There was a reference to Frankenstein, and there was a reference to the Holocaust research done in Nazi death camps. Excuse me. Any response to those?
It's better that I not respond. So I'll simply say that at a personal level, I find those references incredibly offensive, and I find it's intolerable that someone would compare our dedicated scientists to Nazi war criminals.
And in summary, this bill has momentum. I mean, the governor said yesterday he wouldn't commit to this specific bill, but he wants to see any profiteering, like Planned Parenthood, incidents revealed by the Planned Parenthood tapes not happening here. Speaker Voss supports it. There's some support in the Senate. What's your appeal to the full Senate and Assembly as they consider in the fall session SB 305?
My appeal is for common sense to prevail. Yes, let's come together and shut down any profiteering, whether it's direct or indirectly related to the tissue banks that are federally regulated. Yes, let's make sure that we continue to set the national standard for the most ethical approaches to using fetal tissue in life-saving research. Let's come together and do that. And I have faith in the democratic process. I have profound respect for the vast majority of people who dedicate themselves to public service and to government. And I think there are wise, good people there who will help bring these perspectives together so that we can ethically do research that will someday get us away from the current need for fetal tissue in order to save lives in the future.
Thank you. Dr. Robert Golden is Dean of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Doctor, thanks for putting SB 305 and research on your campus in context. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir.